Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor when she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through, and keeping their delicate skin happy and healthy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick, goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable as the diaper rash itself. Use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel good about making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra premium formula for moms who will not settle when it comes to their little ones. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with simple, quality ingredients, no artificial dyes or preservatives, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Head to Amazon.com or Walmart.com to grab Dr. Mom Butt Balm because nothing comes between you and your baby, especially not diaper rash. What is birth trauma? What causes birth trauma? What can you do to reduce your chances of experiencing birth trauma? We'll answer all those questions and more in this episode with Kaylee Summers, also known as the Birth Trauma Mama. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you're giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a practicing board-certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 262. Whether this is your first time listening or you have been here before, I am so grateful that you have decided to spend some time with me today. In this episode, we have Kaylee Summers. Kaylee is a licensed clinical social worker and private practice owner in Downingtown, Pennsylvania. She specializes in perinatal trauma and has specific training in both perinatal mental health and EMDR. Kaylee uses her training as a licensed therapist and her lived experience as an amniotic fluid embolism survivor to treat and support families experiencing perinatal trauma. Kaylee has also created Thriving at Birth Trauma Support Communities through Instagram, where her community there is over 190,000, and TikTok, where her community there is over 400,000, as well as her podcast, where she provides connection, story sharing, and resources to support those experiencing birth and other trauma. We have an incredibly informative conversation about what is birth trauma, what causes it, how common it is, what are the symptoms of birth trauma, how you find a balance between something being traumatic versus something that's unexpected or unpleasant or different than what was expected for your birth experience. We discuss suggestions on how to work through birth trauma. We talk about the role social media plays in both helping heal birth trauma and fueling birth trauma. Incredibly useful conversation. You are going to learn a lot from this episode. Now, trauma from birth can come from not being prepared for the unpredictability of the birth process. Now, you cannot be prepared for all the possible things that happen during birth. Like, you really just could never be prepared for what happened to Kaylee. When you hear her story, you're going to be blown away. I mean, it's really a miracle that she's even here. But you can be prepared for a lot for birth, and that really will help you reduce the chances of experiencing birth trauma. I help you get prepared for birth not only through this podcast, but also through my childbirth education class, the Birth Preparation Course. It will get you calm, confident, and empowered to really advocate for yourself and know what to expect with the birth experience for the common things that occur. You can check out all the details of the birth preparation course at drnicolerinkins.com/enroll. And if you use the code Dr. Nicole, you will get an additional 10% off. So check that out at drnicolerinkins.com/enroll. And let's go ahead and get into this episode with Kaylee Summers, also known as the Birth Trauma Mama. Thank you so much for agreeing to come onto the podcast. I am super excited to have you here and share about your work.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, an honor. I love your work and I've had you on my podcast, yes. So it's only fair that it would come on yours.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And not just fair, but important. What you do is incredibly important. So I really want people to know about it. So why don't you start off a bit by telling us about yourself and your work and your family, if you'd like.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Kaylee Summers. I'm a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in perinatal trauma. I got into that particular field as a therapist after my own birth trauma experience with my son, who is somehow almost five. He will be five in July, which is wild.
Time flies.
So, it's a fun age. So yeah, I live in Downingtown, Pennsylvania, which is right outside Philadelphia, mm-hmm. where I run a private practice that specializes in perinatal trauma.
Okay. All right. And what led you to specifically start Birth Trauma Mama? Maybe you'll include a little bit about your birth story. We can't get into the whole thing because it's quite extensive, but you have to hear. If you don't, we don't have to link the episode or the information because it's quite a story for sure. So what led you to take that experience and start Birth Trauma Mama?
Yeah, I think that I went into my birth with my first and only feeling prepared. I felt like I had done all of the work. I felt like I was really flexible. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking like vaginal delivery, C-section, like I feel confident in both of those, whatever I need, I'll be okay. And I talk about this a lot when I present, like I am an anxious person. So I prepared in every way. I prepared for all the different pains, labor, all of that. And the one thing that I didn't prepare for was to not be alive when my son was born.
Yeah.
And I don't think one can prepare for that, to be fair, to my past self.
Right.
But for those listening, I had an amniotic fluid embolism, which is an incredibly rare, thankfully very, very rare obstetric complication that is unpredictable, unpreventable, and often fatal. And so I went in and I was healthy and I went through my labor process, which was an induction. And when I got to 10 centimeters, I stated that I wasn't feeling well, and I went into cardiac arrest. And so a code blue was called. It was obviously very traumatic. It was a very long, extensive process of trying to save my life while also delivering my son. And so during his birth, CPR was being performed on me. And I had, I'll cut the story very short. I had two cardiac arrests. I had DIC. I needed 143 units of blood product. I needed ECMO, I needed Impella, I needed four abdominal surgeries in 3 days, and including an emergency hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. So it was a very long recovery process, and I felt very grateful to be alive, and my team was very grateful that I had survived. But I think what happened for me is I assumed we'd go off into this like fairy tale of having survived something that I shouldn't have and getting the opportunity to go back home as a family of three when we watch, unfortunately, so many who don't survive mm-hmm. an AFE mm-hmm. and or their babies don't survive an AFE. Mm-hmm. And so even as a therapist at the time, I really struggled with allowing myself to have any other feelings mm-hmm. besides gratitude, besides thankfulness that I got to be a mom to my son. Mm-hmm. And at the time, what I was actually feeling was traumatized, of course.
Yes.
And I couldn't take care of my own son.
Sure.
I was terrified to fall asleep because I thought I would die.
Right.
And no one was talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At least in my sphere. I don't want to discount the people that were talking about it at the time, but
right.
I was on social media and I was just scrolling and seeing beautiful water births and like golden hour moments and the picturesque birth. And no one was talking about when things go wrong, when your world gets turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I started my space about 6 months after the birth of my son, which just so happened to be like 2 months before the pandemic started. And so I was definitely surprised, I would say, by how much people connected to that space
right.
and to the story. But I kind of feel like it broke open this whole world of people who were like, yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm.
And not just severe complications, because birth trauma isn't just severe or life-threatening complications.
Sure.
It is a full gamut of experiences, which we can get into a little bit more, that happened during birth. And people needed a space to talk about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always think it's so it's interesting and admirable, really, when people take something that could be such a really difficult experience and turn it into something that has helped now thousands of people, women, process their birth experience. So that's beautiful.
Thank you.
And one thing I do want to ask is, what is your training, your education as a social worker? Because everybody and their, you know, mother, sister, grandmother, and uncle, whoever is on social media talking about things. And not that we discount personal experiences, because of course that's important, but people should know like the training and the background of the person who you're learning from, because you need to know what influences what they're saying. So what's your training and education to do the work you do?
Yeah, of course. So I'll start with, I have a bachelor's in psychology. Mm-hmm. I feel like who didn't get a bachelor's in psychology when they weren't sure what they wanted to do? I did know, I did at that point think I wanted to be a therapist, but I was actually an elementary ed major for two of my college years.
Okay.
And yes, so then I did transition into being a psych major. And then I went and I got my master's in social work, and I worked in higher education actually for a few years. Mm. And then I worked and lived at a boarding school, which is an interesting existence. Uh-huh. that's where I was at when I had my son.
Okay.
And then once I had my son, I did a lot of training in perinatal mental health. So I'm actually a PMHC, which means I'm certified in perinatal mental health, which means I have a bunch of training and had to pass a test to be certified in that through Postpartum Support International. And then I also have training in some trauma modalities like EMDR. I'm trained in EMDR, as well as kind of the start of being trained in internal family systems therapy.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I think all of those things are really important, because I value people. You take this work very seriously,
yes,
is what I'm getting at.
It's,
yes. And, you know, staying up on things and up to date on things, which is really important.
Yeah.
So let's get into, what is birth trauma? What is the definition of birth trauma?
I think it can vary depending on who you ask, but I like to very broadly define birth trauma as any experience during or related to birth. Now we can kind of talk about the bigger umbrella perinatal trauma, which is trying to conceive, pregnancy, birth,
sure,
postpartum, any trauma that happens in any of those environments. And by trauma, we mean anything that truly overwhelms the nervous system's ability to cope in that moment.
Got it.
That will look very different for each person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so, that's why trauma is so subjective in nature.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Can you give like two or three examples of what would be considered a traumatic birth?
Yeah. So the way that I actually like to talk about it is that there are hundreds, thousands of different scenarios that can create trauma in birth. Most often they fall into two categories.
Okay.
One is treatment provided by the care team.
Okay.
Whether that is mistreatment, whether that is obstetric violence, but treatment by care team providers. Mm-hmm. And then the other side would be a threat or a perceived threat to life or safety.
Having a baby can feel overwhelming and exhausting, and that can lead to feelings of disconnect from your partner. Well, I have got something to help. It's called Paired. It's an app for couples who want to strengthen their relationship. It was founded on the simple belief that real lasting love is a daily practice. All of Paired's content is backed by experts and relationship therapists, and it's proven to work. So how exactly does it work? Well, you and your partner download the app Pair Together, and every day Paired gives you personalized questions, quizzes, and games to stay connected, deepen your conversations, and have fun too. The best part is that you cannot see your partner's answers until you answer yourself. So it's a safe space to have an open and honest discussion about your relationship. No faking, no pretending, just genuine connection. Now, one of the key benefits from using Paired daily is that it helps you make that time to connect with your partner on a regular basis, and it doesn't have to be complicated in order to do so. Now, my husband Falcon and I are pretty private, so I'm not going to share any juicy details of our relationship, but I can tell you that using this app has been helpful to get us to connect more regularly, open up more, and even learn new things about each other, even though we've been married for 18 years. So whether you're just a few dates in or have been together a long time, like we have, find the time to connect with your partner and nourish your relationship. With the Paired app, it's easy and fun, and it only takes 5 minutes a day. Head to paired.com/Dr. Nicole to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. Just head to paired.com/Dr. Nicole to sign up today. Now, how do you find the balance between something that is being traumatic and then something that is unexpected or unpleasant, but actually in the realm of what would be considered normal for birth? Like an example of that is, I was talking to someone at work the other day, and she was saying her sister had pushed for 3 hours for her baby. And she said she was traumatized by having to push that long. Mm-hmm. But 3 hours of pushing actually is within the realm of normal, especially for a first-time baby. Yeah. So how do you make that balance or distinction?
Yeah.
Or is it important to make?
Yeah. So it's actually not my call. It's not anyone's call except for the person that experiences mm-hmm. that event. So pushing for 3 hours may have caused trauma for that specific person based on their past experiences, based on the nervous system that they walked into that hospital with. And most importantly, mm-hmm. the way that the environment around her while she was pushing for 3 hours mm-hmm. impacted her.
Mm. Okay.
So it's, I will always say it is, I'm not going to speak in absolutes, but it sure. is less about the mode of delivery or the event that happens and more about the way it's communicated and carried out, mm-hmm. which is not always the fault of providers. It is at times, but like I'll take mine for instance. No one's fault.
Right.
But the way that my C-section was carried out was while I was not alive. That's traumatic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's, again, less about the mode of delivery, more about the way it's communicated and carried out. And with trauma in general, it's actually less about the event itself and more about the way that our nervous system and our brain processes that event.
Gotcha.
Which is why those who have experienced things like sexual assault mm-hmm. are at a higher risk for experiencing their birth as traumatic.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. And a really important yeah. point to make. So how common is birth trauma, and how are we like measuring how common birth trauma is?
Yeah. So right now, the most recent statistic puts it at 1 in 3 individuals perceive their birth as traumatic.
Okay.
Now, because it's a subjective experience, mm-hmm. we have to base it on self-report.
Sure.
In the sense of like trauma. PTSD is a different story. And that's because that has a very specific criteria that we have to meet. Okay. Someone can be traumatized. They can experience trauma and have symptoms of trauma without meeting the full criteria for a PTSD diagnosis.
Okay. Got it.
So when we say like, okay, but how many people are actually diagnosed with PTSD? We're missing a large group of people that are negatively impacted by their trauma that don't reach the criteria to be diagnosed with PTSD.
Okay.
So in the research, we're looking at about 1 in 3. And I like to really show how mm-hmm. much that is by breaking down the math that is over 1 million people mm-hmm. in the US mm-hmm. alone each year mm-hmm. feeling traumatized mm-hmm. by their birth experience.
Mm-hmm. 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 And that's a lot of people.
As a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people. A lot of people. Do we know like what people characterize as why they describe it as traumatic? And maybe that goes into my next question is, what are symptoms of birth trauma?
Yeah. So we see a lot of re-experiencing, a lot of rumination. Like the picture that comes to my head when I think of someone who's experienced a birth trauma is like sitting on their couch or in a nursery chair, feeding their baby in whatever way they're doing that, and just replaying it over and over and over in their head.
Okay.
That's really common. And then there are obviously triggers that happen, like the smell of the hand sanitizer in the NICU or the beeping in the ICU. People just talking about birth in general can make our nervous system have a reaction that feels like flooding and overwhelm. And typically we see with trauma, like a hyper arousal of the nervous system, which is that typical like hypervigilance. We might mistake it for anxiety, especially postpartum anxiety.
Right.
And then the hypo arousal, which is more of that dissociated, numbed out, disconnected feeling that we see kind of on the other side of a trauma reaction.
Got it. Okay. All right. That makes sense. So what do you say to people who say, I mean, is this really trauma? You know, yes, this wasn't a great experience, but my baby's fine. I'm fine. What do you say to those folks?
If the person is saying it themselves, like, I'm good. I mean, I'm not going to tell them that they, like, okay. I'm not going to, a great example of this is when I speak to like L&D nurses and OBs and we talk about the debriefing and we talk about giving resources, I will mention that sometimes patients will say exactly that. Like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm healthy. The baby's healthy. Everything's fine. And they might truly believe that down into their bones and continue to feel that way. And it will not impact them because that's based on, again, their past experiences, their nervous system. And so I will say to nurses, to OBs, to say, that's great. I'm so glad you're feeling okay. If at some point in the future that changes, for some people it does, for some people it doesn't, I'd really like to be able to offer you some resources now for you to take home so that if down the road this pops up for you again, you have those resources readily available for you.
Got it. So it really is, all of this is so much about, which is what it should be, but this doesn't always come across. It really is about the individual person and how they perceive their experience.
Yes. And I want to be very cautious because when we word it, that is true. And sometimes I think we take that and manipulate it into being like the fault of the patient and like, there's nothing we can do.
Right,
they're just going to perceive it however they perceive it. And if they just would have had lower expectations, then they wouldn't feel traumatized. And I don't agree with that.
Got it.
So I think, yes, it is the way that our nervous system perceives something, but we often perceive a lack of safety when the people around us are not being clear, transparent, and compassionate with their communication.
Got it. Okay. All right. All right. This is really good, really good information. Yeah. So
we can mitigate. We can mitigate so much trauma by the way we communicate with patients.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So when people have experienced birth trauma, what are two or three things that they can do to help? I don't know, is it work through process to deal with birth trauma?
I think in the immediate, and the whole reason I created my space is to know that like you're not crazy and you're not a monster. Because sometimes birth trauma makes us feel that way because we have all these negative feelings now towards the birth of our child that we love so much.
Sure.
And it feels so disconcerting and confusing. So knowing that like you are not bad, you are not wrong, you're traumatized. And that is something we can treat. And so kind of giving yourself the grace and self-compassion to know like, this is really hard.
Right.
The feelings you're having are valid and okay. And there's help out there for you. That would be like the first kind of step. And hopefully that's what the spaces that people are creating around perinatal trauma are providing. Like normalizing the abnormal situation. Like this is, I always say, this is a normal response to an extraordinary event.
Yes.
And then the treatment aspect, I really, really, really highly recommend that people are seeking out treatment that is what we refer to as like a bottom-up model.
Okay. What does that mean?
Yeah. So when we say that, when we think of traditional talk therapy, which is a lot of the work that I do and I wholeheartedly value, we can't talk our way out of trauma because that's not how trauma is stored in the brain. And so in order to be able to reprocess trauma, it is my belief that we need a bottom-up approach. We can't talk about it.
Okay.
we have to like feel it.
Okay.
And access that part of the brain to be, I say we kind of like reach in, pull out the traumatic memory. And things like EMDR, IFS, brain spotting give us access to that part of the brain.
Okay.
And then we're able to reprocess it and reorganize it into our typical memory. It's not going to make it feel happy or good. It's still going to feel sad. It's still going to feel hard.
Right.
But it's not going to activate our nervous system in the same way that completely overwhelms us.
Got it. Okay. I don't think I've ever heard that before. And it makes perfect sense. So what is EMDR, or what are some of the modalities you just talked about?
Yeah, of course. So EMDR is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a mouthful.
Yes.
And it's, you know, we see it in the research. It has been shown to effectively decrease trauma symptoms. And I think sometimes EMDR seems a little hokey. I'm always like to my clients, I'm like, listen, I get it.
Right.
Even in the training, I was like, we'll see about you.
Right.
but it uses eye movements or really any bilateral simulation. So sometimes we'll do tapping on either side when I work virtually with clients. And again, it kind of allows us to access that part of the brain to be able to then, in a way, desensitize that memory, because it's fragmented when it happens.
Right.
The way that it's processed is it gets fragmented. Mm-hmm. And my favorite thing is when clients will like describe their story. And at the end, almost every single person I've ever met with will say, I'm so sorry, that was all over the place. And I'll say, that's because that's how your brain processed it.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Because the part of our brain, I could go on for days,
but yeah,
the part of our brain, that's kind of simplistically put in charge of memory, the hippocampus, goes offline during trauma. And so the hippocampus gives us two things. It gives us like a beginning, middle, and end. It gives us a story to our memory.
Right.
And it also gives us, I view it as like a stamp. It gives us like this stamp that says this happened in the past. That no longer exists when a trauma occurs and the fight, flight, freeze, fawn, et cetera, takes over. That's a different part of the brain.
Okay.
And the way that we see this the best is a recent study that came out that talked about trauma. And it had participants record themselves saying, like reciting a happy or neutral memory, a sad memory, and a traumatic memory. And then they played it back to them while imaging their brain.
Okay.
And when they played back the happy, neutral, and sad memories, the hippocampus was activated.
Right.
Because that's our like quote unquote memory center.
Right.
When they played back the traumatic memory, it was actually, I believe it was the posterior cingulate cortex that was activated, not the hippocampus. And the posterior cingulate cortex is involved in kind of like internal processing, daydreaming.
Right.
So what that, the information that that gave us was when you think about or re-experience a trauma, it doesn't act like a memory. It acts like a present experience.
Okay. This is really helpful information.
God.
Yes. So, and I want to be clear, you're not saying that talk therapy isn't important.
We love talk therapy.
Okay.
And it builds rapport and it's important and it works in a lot of, especially for, you know, getting clients into therapy for the first time. Most of my clients that I see for perinatal trauma, it's the first time they've been in therapy. Because it's like the first time that their world has been like cracked wide open in this particular way.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I love talk therapy. It's amazing. And I think we need tools that allow us to reprocess trauma, and talk therapy is not that.
Got it. Okay. So start with talk therapy, and may that include things like journaling or sharing your story, or what about reaching out to the care team or the doctor?
Yes.
Do you ever do any of those things or talk about any of those things?
Yeah, we facilitate a lot of stuff like that. And it's not like a this or this. I integrate talk therapy with trauma-based bottom-up processing.
Sure.
with all of my clients. But yeah, we do lots of journaling, lots of written expression to kind of take back your narrative of the story, a bit of narrative therapy. And I'm a big fan of people returning if they had a positive experience with their providers.
Okay.
Of returning to speak with their providers, to get more debriefing, to better understand their experience from their provider's perspective. Mm-hmm. If their provider was a part of their trauma, it can do a ton of harm.
Okay.
To go back and try to get answers from that doctor, because that doctor may not react in the way that the patient is assuming or hoping that they would. Like, they're looking for repair. A patient in that situation is often looking for repair.
Right.
And I will maybe say, like, let's pause and think about this. What happens if that doctor reacts with, like, it wasn't that big of a deal? I don't know why you're so upset. How harmful would that feel for you?
Gotcha. Okay. So if they have a negative expectation or a negative association, because maybe, as you mentioned, it was part of the way their treatment team care for them, then you may suggest not going back to talk about that. Or maybe what about, like, even sharing a letter to get your thoughts out? Like, what are thoughts, things like that?
You hit the perfect, I'm a big letter writing therapist. I love the exercise of writing a letter, regardless of whether we're sending a letter or not. Mm-hmm. Often we're not actually sending the letter, but getting out what you would hope to say to that provider. And then maybe I've had a few clients where down the road, they're like, actually, I want to send this now. I feel like I'm in a place where I don't care if I don't hear back from them, like whatever happens, happens, but I need it to be sent. That's definitely something we'll do. And then I will work with clients to be able to find a new provider that they can go to who will debrief them using their medical records.
Okay.
So that they are getting more information, but hopefully in a way that has less potential to re-traumatize.
Okay. How often does that happen? How well does that go over, I guess?
Which, like, having someone go to a new provider?
A new provider and saying, hey, can you look at my medical records and sort of tell me what your thoughts are, kind of thing?
I would say that it goes pretty well, but with a lot of prep. So I'm walking clients through, like, how do we set up this meeting with this provider to help them understand where you're coming from?
Okay.
So we're not going to say, like, that doctor was terrible and, like, because that's just not going to set up a collaborative relationship with this doctor, because they don't know what happened. They don't want to just blindly kind of crap on another doctor.
Right.
So we're saying, hey, I felt this way about my past experience. It's been really hard for me. I would really like to connect with a provider who I just feel like we're on the same page more and can take me through the medical side of this experience. I'm not looking to get anyone in trouble. I just need some support here. And I just want to see if you can be that person. And I will have people actually ask to, like, interview a few different providers and see what feels like the best fit for them.
Okay. Okay. And then I guess you said it's a, you know, stepwise or bottom up approach.
Yes.
What role does medication play in this?
Yeah, I think medication can be a really helpful support. Depends on the person always, depends on their feelings about medication. But I am a big proponent of medication, especially as a bridge. I just feel like there's this really acute phase, both personally in my own experience and working with clients, where the symptoms can feel just so intense and so overwhelming that helping us pull that back a little bit can really help in that postpartum period. Many people are getting diagnosed with things like PPD and PPA outside of their trauma experience, but often I think because of their trauma experience. And so medications to help counteract some of those symptoms can be really helpful. I see it used a lot with in kind of severe maternal events or experiences like I had. We have this really high rate of health anxiety that makes it really difficult to function.
Sure.
And I've seen a lot of success in both combined therapy and medication with treating some of that.
Okay. Okay. So someone feels someone believes they have experienced birth trauma. Someone has experienced birth trauma. What is the first place you tell them to go? What would you tell them to do from there?
Yeah, I would want them to get connected to a therapist mm-hmm. who is specialized in both trauma and perinatal mental health. So Postpartum Support International has mm-hmm. a directory that you can like toggle things like EMDR, trauma, and they're a great place. The Touchstone Institute is also another one that has, they're like a training institute, and they train clinicians in perinatal mental health and specifically in perinatal trauma. They also have a directory on their website where you can put in your state because it has to be within state. I don't know if people know this, but for social workers, for LPCs, for anyone at a master's level clinician, we have state parameters. So we can only practice within the state that our license is in.
Okay. That is good to know. Good to know. And when do you think it's people should seek professional help? Like at what point, you know, is like, this is too much or is that, how do they think through that decision?
So I think with, if we look at the research, like mm-hmm. the earlier we get treatment for trauma, the better. Mm-hmm. And I also understand that there are constraints to that.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, if people don't want to be in therapy, I don't want them to be in therapy. Like I want them sure. to take all the time they need right. until they feel like, you know, it's not always going to feel great to sit in therapy. I was in therapy this morning and I'm like, oh, my ass is work.
Right.
but I think the earlier, the better. And what I often see is people come in more like 3, 6, 8 months mm-hmm. postpartum mm-hmm. Because there's just such a cloud of chaos of trying to like take care of a newborn yeah. and do all of this stuff. And so I want to also plant the seed of hope that like I have clients who come like 10 years mm. after their birth experience
okay.
and get so much healing okay. out of the work that we do together. Okay. So okay. it's like a both and.
Yeah. I would imagine if it's impacting your ability to function and find yeah. joy in your life, find joy in motherhood, yeah. it's time to get some help.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. 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 Now, sort of random question. Yeah. What role do you think social media plays in both helping heal birth trauma or also fueling birth trauma?
I love this question. This is a very good question. So I think a lot of things about this. Mm-hmm. I think that spaces like mine and others talking about perinatal trauma are twofold. They're for people, like when people find my space, I actually think it's less about preparing for birth, honestly.
Okay.
Like that's never actually been my goal.
Right.
For others. Mm-hmm. My goal would be like, hey, birth trauma exists. Right. I want you to know that. That's it. I just want you to know that when you go into your labor, because then if you end up on the other side of your experience
right.
with all of the feelings that we've had that make us feel crazy and make us feel like a monster, you know, that's not what's happening. You know, this is birth trauma because you've heard of it.
Right.
And you know exactly where you can go to find support in other stories like yours.
Gotcha.
And I think that there's a wealth of information and misinformation online right now mm-hmm. about birth that makes it very hard for new parents or prospective parents, soon to be parents, to navigate. And it is just a really hard place to be. Mm-hmm. I see it with parenting in my own, like, it's just like there are so many decisions to be made.
Right.
And I think that there are a lot of people who are coming in and saying like these social media spaces are making patients' expectations too high for birth and that's uh-huh. traumatizing them.
Right.
Don't agree with that, honestly.
Okay.
I don't. I think everyone gets to have their own expectations of birth. And I do think that it is the job of the care team to get curious about maybe birth plans that are more inflexible or to get curious about birth plans that are 15 pages long, mm-hmm. not so much this is ridiculous
right.
and this is going to cause trauma, but like there must be a lot of anxiety and fear
right.
coming in for this patient.
Sure.
And how can we meet them where they're at mm-hmm. to make sure that they can have a comfortable experience?
Gotcha.
A safe enough experience.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Would you, and I think you touched upon this earlier, that trauma isn't necessarily about your birth not going the way you expected, like there is room or space to not be traumatized by the fact that, hey, I did end up having a C-section, even though that's something that I wanted. Is that fair to say? Or something that I didn't want, rather. Yeah,
absolutely. And there is merit in flexibility mm-hmm. when people are going into their birth experiences. And I also think that telling patients that if they don't have expectations, then they won't be traumatized mm-hmm. is a cop out.
I agree.
Because I had very little expectations of my birth. Mm-hmm. And I was traumatized. So the equation doesn't always work.
Yes. Yes.
And I think, like, again, if a patient has a C-section, an mm-hmm. unplanned C-section, and they are devastated about it, if we approach them and we say, that makes sense. It makes sense that you would be devastated about it because this wasn't a part of your plan.
Right.
And this isn't what you wanted. And I'm really sorry that this is how, you know, it had to be, or this is mm-hmm. what we had to do. Mm-hmm. I want you to know it's not your fault. That changes patient outcomes. That protects from trauma.
Right.
On the other hand, we have people saying it's not that big of a deal. Yeah. C-sections happen all the time. And that comes from a good place. That comes from a place of wanting to reassure, but it dismisses and invalidates and actually increases the risk for trauma for that patient.
Yeah. It's just like, I can't stand it when people say, just be happy you have a healthy baby. Like there's just more, so much more to it than that.
And we, like, we actually, I'm working on a post for this for today, for today's, we're recording World Maternal Mental Health Day. And we straight up look traumatized patients, women and patients in the eyes and say, at least you and your baby are healthy. Traumatized.
Right.
They're not healthy.
Right. No, they're not.
It's wild.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's like there's more than just like being able to physically walk out of the place. Like
exactly.
There's so much more to health than that for sure. Like a huge part of your health is more than that. Did you know that less than 5% of U.S. pregnant women consume the recommended amount of DHA daily, i.e. more than 200 milligrams? Ritual's Essential Prenatal meets the requirement with 350 milligrams of vegan omega-3 DHA. This is one of the things that I like about Ritual. It's a science-backed formula that is third-party tested for heavy metals and microbes. Build key nutrient levels to support a healthy pregnancy with Essential Prenatal's vegan, bioavailable, and clinically studied key nutrients, including methylated folate and nature identical choline to support baby's neural tube development, omega-3 DHA for brain and early vision development, as well as vitamin D to support fetal bone health. And Ritual is rigorously tested by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Not only Clean Label Project certified, Essential Prenatal also earned their Purity Award. This is only awarded to products in the top 33% of testing that are leading their category in minimizing consumer exposure to chemicals and contaminants like heavy metals, pesticide residues, and plasticizers. You deserve to know exactly what you're putting into your body, especially when it comes to prenatal multivitamins. And with Ritual's dedication to traceable science and sourcing, you always will. See for yourself with 25% off your first month at ritual.com/Dr. Nicole. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women Prenatal to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/Dr. Nicole for 25% off. So is there anything that people can do while they're pregnant to help mitigate birth trauma?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with your support team mm-hmm. and your care team, mm-hmm. which isn't always as much of a choice as we hope it is in terms of like who's on call, how your hospital system works.
Yeah.
But I think having a doula mm-hmm. or a support person that knows a lot about birth, mm-hmm. about labor. Mm-hmm. I don't like to talk about doulas as if like just having a doula is like the miracle change to all trauma. Mm-hmm. But we know from the research, it helps a significant amount.
Right.
And so I'm a big fan of doulas. I'm a big fan of preparing a flexible birth preferences situation, more for like your understanding of like, if this goes this way, if this goes this way,
right?
What are our options here? What are our choices here? And even more so, like a postpartum plan.
Yeah. So important. We don't talk about that enough and should start talking about it like in the third trimester, actually, like around 28, 30 weeks. Like, what's going to happen when this human is here that you have to take care of?
Yeah. And how do you find time to take care of yourself?
Yes.
If something, especially if there's trauma involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious, in your own experience with folks you've worked with, do you see, I know this may be hard to say, but do you see that people's trauma most often comes from the care that they received or from their care team being mistreated, or is it from an unexpected event? Like, what do you see? I'm just curious.
I think that the overwhelming amount of birth trauma comes from care received.
Yeah.
I think I become a little bit of a magnet to like severe maternal events, because that's my experience. And I speak to that.
Right.
I also speak to obstetric violence and mistreatment, but I think I see more severe complications in my space just because that's my experience.
Sure. Yeah.
But I do think, and from other colleagues who are meeting with clients on a daily basis, the overwhelming amount of trauma comes from provider care.
Okay.
And I think we could even like lower rates of trauma, not only, and I want to be clear about this. I don't think I think there are bad providers, 100%, just like there are bad therapists and bad people in every profession. And I think an overwhelming amount of provider care that's causing trauma is not malicious or overt. And I think that there's a lot we can do in those situations to communicate better with patients, to make it a collaborative care model rather than a power dynamic that favors the medical provider.
Yeah.
But I think that providers can't be perfect. Like, I want to say, like, you hold so much power in your ability to change patient outcomes when it comes to trauma. And I know that feels like a lot of pressure, but you can always repair if you screw it up.
Right.
But being able to repair means you have to have the self-awareness and humility to go into a patient room and say, hey, I didn't love the way I handled that interaction.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I just think this is something that I try to talk about, is that I so much of what we do is, we're not malicious about the way that we care for folks. It's our culture and how that impacts people. And we don't realize it. For instance, something as simple as asking permission before doing a vaginal exam can be actually pretty traumatizing to someone, which I didn't realize for years, because we're so taught to just go in, do an exam, and not necessarily, but if the person doesn't say stop, then that must mean that they're okay with it. And that's not true. Like, you need to specifically stop and ask before you do things in somebody's bodies, you know, same sort of things like, oh, they just came in and just broke my water, or they just came in. You know, I think so. A lot of it is, like you said, some of the things that we don't, it's not necessarily malicious, but they're actually not difficult things to change about the way that we practice that would make a big difference in people's perception of their birth experience.
Yeah, 100%. The paternalistic care model has a massive impact on the way that patients are treated and provider trauma.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trauma in the medical profession. And again, the system isn't really helping providers and care teams to be able to like take the time and have the resources to treat their own trauma.
Yeah. That, now that is true also. Yes. That's a topic for a whole nother.
I know. It's a whole nother episode.
Yes. Now, as we wrap up, what would you say is the most frustrating part of your work?
I love that question. I don't think I've ever been asked it before. You know what? I think I'm going to speak from the social media space. I think one of the most frustrating parts of that work in that space is the constant polarization of birth education. I feel like I'm stuck in between. Like, I had incredible care providers.
Right.
I had the most wonderful empathetic care team in the world.
Right.
And I still understand how people don't.
Right.
And so much of what happens in the birth space, I think, is catapulted, is impacted by trauma.
Yeah.
And so you have people who are free birth, home birth, mm-hmm. like absolutely, because they've been so traumatized by mm-hmm. the medical system. Mm-hmm. And I am all for anyone's birth decision that they want to make.
Right.
Because it's them and their body. Like, you go. Right. I am happy for you. My trauma has settled in a way that, like, the decision for me, if I were able to have more kids, would be obviously in the hospital. But that doesn't mean I, again, don't agree with home birth for right. others.
Right.
But we don't have a lot of that middle ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what happens is it makes for very antagonistic, mm-hmm. sorry, relationships between patients and providers yeah. on both ends.
Yeah.
And so when I try to talk about obstetric violence, I get a lot of pushback from providers. Mm-hmm. And when I try to talk about the merits of all of the interventions that were done to save my life, mm-hmm. I get a lot of like, well, you had an induction. What did you expect?
Mm.
Right. And so it's like, can we get a middle ground here? Right. And there are people that have this, but like everything becomes a pushback against mm-hmm. the other side.
Yeah.
And yeah. birth is over-medicalized. I agree with that.
Right.
And I also don't think everyone should be birthing at home.
Right. Exactly.
So like, you know, medical intervention is required and needed in a lot of situations. And the argument becomes if we take birth out of the hospital, we solve the problem of birth trauma. And I could not disagree more with that. Because one, we can't take every birth out of the hospital because nope. we have high risk birthing individuals. Mm-hmm. That is unfair to them.
Yep. Or some people want to be in the hospital.
Well, yeah. I mean, me.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean,
but totally. They yeah. want the safety net, but they uh-huh. also want, but then, and on the other hand, they mm-hmm. want providers who believe in physiologic birth.
Yes. 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 Absolutely.
And we are lacking that.
Oh, 1,000%. That is very true. Yeah. And then also on the flip side, you know, her home, all birth has risk, including yeah. birth outside of the hospital. Yeah. I had a unfortunate story on my podcast of someone whose baby died after a home birth. Yeah. Not that that's common at all, but you know,
was it Erica Zavadar?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, I think if we just started from centering the individual needs of yes. like each person and what they want, like you want a home birth. Okay. Is this good for you? Then let's yep. make it good for you. Okay. You want to be in the hospital and you want an epidural the second you hit the door. Okay. So let's make it good for you. So anyway, I think we're sort of saying the same thing. Hopefully we can kind of spread the word. And then on the flip side, I ask most frustrating. So what's the most mm-hmm. rewarding part of your work?
Oh man, there are so many rewarding parts. I really do think it's overall, it's like helping people be able to like heal from their birth trauma, right? Mm-hmm. But really it's that moment of people realizing, oh, it's not me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not wrong or bad or crazy.
Right.
There's something that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this community of people that can support me.
Sure.
And also something very specific to me that I take a lot of like pride and I get almost emotional thinking about it is getting to work with individuals who are going on to have a subsequent birth experience,
yeah.
which I've had to do a lot of my own work around before I obviously was in a situation to be able to help
mm-hmm.
other clients do what I can't do.
Right.
But oh my gosh, the joy of getting, and then I get to see them postpartum after they've had their second experience mm-hmm. and whether the experience is complicated or not.
Right.
They have a different experience and a different nervous system approach yeah. to that experience. So mm-hmm. it almost always ends up being a somewhat neutral or positive experience, which yeah. is cool.
That is awesome. So what's your favorite piece of advice that you would give to an expectant mom or parent?
Maybe it's the sign that's behind me, which might be backwards in this, but it says what's coming will come and we'll meet it when it does.
Mm.
And that's easier said than done. I want to be very clear as an anxious girly. I get that. But we can't control our birth. And it's one of the biggest uncertainties in life. And we have to be able to lean into that uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing, right? So anxiety is not only our overestimation of how terrible something will be or how scary something will be, but it's also our underestimation of our ability to handle it. And so I want to remind people that they can handle what comes their way, and that if unfortunately something really not great comes their way during their birth experience, that we are on the other side waiting for them to support them.
I love that. Love that. Love that. So where can people find you and all of the wonderful resources and things that you offer?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram or TikTok at @thebirthtrauma_mama. I also have a podcast called the Birth Trauma Mama Podcast and my website, which is thebirthtraumamama.com.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come onto the podcast. This was such useful information. I know I personally learned a lot myself, and I know the listeners did too.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a great conversation.
All right. Wasn't that an incredibly just informative episode? When I hear her story, it really is truly a miracle that she is alive and with us today to share all of the wonderful information that she shares. Now, after every episode, when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes. And here are my top takeaways around my conversation with Kaylee. And they all are kind of related. So first one is, there is no judgment around birth. There should never be something that says you should just be happy with the experience that you had and that you and your baby are healthy. Or there should never be any, oh, it wasn't that bad. I have definitely had to learn about this throughout the course of my career and not judging around birth. An area that I had to learn about this is people who decided to have an elective cesarean birth. I just wasn't open to understanding why people would make that choice. And now I've certainly come a long way and know that people should be able to choose what works best for them. Okay. And that goes to the second point, which is we need to center each person in their birth experience. It's not about telling people that birth is one way or another. We really need to reach each person where they are and talk to them about the things that are important and support them in helping them have the best birth experience. It's actually not as hard as people make it out to be. Our culture surrounding birth, particularly in hospital birth, just is not there yet. And it really goes along with my third point, which is there are no absolutes in birth. So often you hear that, okay, it should be a home birth, or it should be a hospital birth, or you should have a midwife, or you should have a doctor, or you should have a doula. And really, there are no absolutes in birth. Home birth isn't necessarily better than hospital birth. Hospital birth isn't necessarily by default better than home birth. Midwives aren't necessarily better than doctors, or vice versa. It really depends on each person's individual needs, what each person brings to their own birth experience. We have to stop with all of these absolutes and things should be this way, should be that way. And you're going to hear that a lot on social media about, you know, people give sort of absolutes or even it's general advice. And I want to caution you, even the advice that I give is really to take a step back and not just accept things for what they are, but think about things in the context of what is most important to you. Really center yourself in your own birth experience and then create a team around you who supports that, whether that's your partner, whether that's a doula, definitely your provider. If you have options and choices for your provider, whether that's a midwife, whether that's a doctor, really center yourself. There are no absolutes in birth. There should be no judgment about birth. Now, definitely a way to help you, again, make sure you can really make choices that work best for you is getting that evidence-based, that holistic information, taking that general information and then thinking about how it applies to your own unique situation. That's where my childbirth education class, the birth preparation course, comes in relationship specifically to childbirth in the hospital. You can check out all the details of that at drnicolerankins.com/enroll. There are many options for childbirth education out there. It's so important. I just encourage you to choose something Even if you don't think that the birth preparation course is right for you, childbirth education is crucial, and I really, really want you to do it. Okay, so there you have it. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast in Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to me right now. And if you feel so inclined, I would so appreciate it if you leave an honest review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other women to find the show. I love to hear what you think about the show, and I do shout outs from those reviews from time to time as well. Also, please share this podcast with a friend. Sharing is caring, and I know you know somebody who's going to benefit from this information, so pass it along. Pay it forward. And then if you want to connect with me outside of the podcast, a great place to do that is Instagram. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins, where I also share great holistic evidence-based pregnancy and birth information in bite-sized format. So check me out on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins. So that's it for this episode. Do come on back next week and remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.